Shalom and welcome to Tehillim Yomi. Today is Mizmor Kaf Dalet, Psalm 24. The psalm divides easily into three sections. The first one, verses 1 and 2, start with the words of David, Mizmor l'Adonai ha'aretz umloa, tevel v'yoshveva, ki hu al yamim yisada, v'al nehorot yechoneneha. To God belongs the land and all its inhabitants, for God fashioned it upon the waters, and we'll explain what that means. Part 2, in verses 3 to 6, asks, Mi yale b'har Adonai, mi yakum b'mkom kodesho? Who will ascend the mountain of God? Who will stand in his holy place? Then goes on to give some ethical characteristics of the individual who's worthy of rising up to the land, to the mountain of God. Yisa bracha me'et Adonai, u'tzedakah me'el yisho, ze'ador dorshav, v'akshe panecha Yaakov selah. Says he will receive a blessing, righteousness from God, and something to the effect of one generation to the next will transmit this message. We'll explain. The third section is Se'u Sha'arim Roshechem, U'se'u Pitchei Olam, you know, lift up your eyes and see who is coming in. And it's four verses that kind of, two verses which repeat each other themselves, about accepting the God of valiance, the God of might, the God of holiness, who's going to enter into the gates. What ties all of these sections together? So the first one, as I mentioned, starts with the position that to God is the land. Now this presumably comes to refute someone's assumption that God doesn't have the land, it doesn't belong to him, or he created the land and then he has nothing left to do with it anyway, he just leaves it be. Either way, the text offers a simple and straightforward refutation. The land belongs to God, he created it, and he's continuously, constantly involved with it and its inhabitants. The way we see that is the second verse, which modifies the first. The first one says, to God is the land. The second one says, ki. Now that ki is a modification. It explains what it's meant by La'ashem ha'aretz u'lo'ah. Ki hu el yamim yisada, it's a complicated expression. For God founded the land on the oceans. So this is a little complicated. The land being on top of waters is a seeming impossibility. Earth is soluble, water is solvent. Science would have the land sink into the waters. And yet the Torah attests that this is how the earth was established. If this is true, then the imagery in the psalm is quite significant. It is as if God himself is holding up the earth, preventing it from sinking. God, the creator of the land, is also directly involved in the ongoing existence of the land and the waters. If we unconditionally acknowledge God as the ruler of the world, that will also bring us to understand the intensity of God's day-to-day involvement in our lives. His daily, hourly support of our world attests to his constant involvement. Now, in the second section, the psalm kind of transitions to a question that we encountered in Psalm 15. Who is worthy? In this time, it's who is worthy to ascend the mountain of God. In his excellent book on Tehillim, entitled Songs of the Heart, an introduction to the book of Psalms, well-known biblical scholar Dr. Nachum Sarna presents an extensive analysis on 10 Psalms, and of them, he groups together Psalms 24 and 15 in a unit he calls Liturgies of Entrance. Because both Psalms describe the worthy person whose positive attributes and restraint from negative action allow him to either ascend the mountain of God or dwell in God's holy tent. Sarna points out that historically, this is what took place. In ancient Egyptian temples, one can see the inscriptions of worshipers who proclaimed their guiltlessness to a variety of deities, suggesting that there was a ceremony at the approach to the temple to decide whether the individual was fit to enter. And perhaps this, you know, copies this idea that you're entering, you're going to the temple. Are you worthy? And you have to actually stand up and declare yourself to be worthy. Now, in biblical Jewish Hebrew times, the individual would be bringing a sacrifice to the temple, to the Beit HaMikdash. But remember that many prophets rebuked the individual who was very good at bringing sacrifices, but very bad at having his heart not be in line with the presentation that he was showing. In other words, might have been evil, might have been ethically compromised, and nevertheless, standing up there and had very big tzitzis and a nice big animal to show how religious they seemingly were. For this reason, the psalm says, you know who's worthy? Niki kapayim uvar levav. Clean hands and a pure heart. This simple formula reflects the important relationship between our actions and our feelings. Now, that was the historical perspective that Sarna presents, but there is also a figurative interpretation. The mountain of God doesn't mean the physical temple, but rather we should ask in general, what should our focus be on this journey of life? Where is our ascension to the mountain of God? How do we describe that spiritual fulfillment of a life that's filled with meaning and worth? It's here that I wonder the definition of verse 3. I said, Mi Aleh Bahar Hashem, who ascends the mountain of God, Umi Yakum Bimkom Kocho, and who will stand up in the place, and here the word that's ambiguous is Kocho, his holiness. Now, it could either simply be a biblical parallelism that's saying the mountain of God, who will rise the mountain of God, and now the second half is more or less the same thing, who will stand in the place of holiness? I accept. But there is another possibility. Perhaps Kodesh doesn't refer to God's holy place. Perhaps Kodesh refers to that individual who is next in line. In other words, there's a ladder or, you know, a mountain, and everyone is on that mountain at different stages, and everyone's trying to ascend to higher levels of closer relationship with God. And some reach, you know, the pinnacle, and then others will stand in their place, will move to that next line. In other words, everybody is getting a bit closer, reaching their different levels in their relationship with Hashem. The message comforts us by implying that spiritual status is not an all or nothing deal. Our quest for godliness is a process, which, done methodically and in the right time, will lead us up the ladder to our final goal. In addition to ensuring the purity of one's heart and mind, one should learn to guard one's tongue and not use God's name inappropriately. And thus we read, Asher lo nasa lashav nafshi v'lo nishba la mirma, one who has not taken God's name in vain, nor sworn deceitfully. One who accomplishes these goals will certainly receive a blessing from God, Yisa bracha me'et Adonai u'tzedakah me'lei yisho. And the psalmist continues saying that this search for God is ongoing, stretching through the generations. Zed dor dor shav. This is how Judaism continues on one generation to the next. We emerge with a feeling of movement, a constant yearning for the next stage of development in life, a this-worldly pursuit of godliness, spirituality, and morality. And this concludes the second section. The third one says the following, Su sharim oshechem v'inasu pitchei olam v'yavo me'elach ha'kavod, mizemelach ha'kavod, Adonai izuz v'gibor, Adonai gibor milchama. Lift up your heads, O gates, so maybe the gates are supposed to look up, and be lifted up yourselves, O doors, pitchei olam, and the King of Glory will come in. Now, who is this King of Glory, the next verse says? Well, it's the Lord, who is Izuz v'gibor, strong and mighty, gibor milchama, mighty in battle. Then the next two verses repeat almost word for word, Su sharim oshechem usu putchei olam, v'yavo melech ha'kavod. And then it answers just a little bit differently. Mi hu zeh melech ha'kavod, Adonai tzevaot, melech ha'kavod tzela. Who is this King of Glory? The Lord of hosts, he is the King of Glory, Selah. So what's the difference between saying that God is coming because he is the God who's valiant in battle, the mighty warrior, versus he's the Lord of hosts, the King of glory? Rashi, quoting the Midrash, places this psalm in historical perspective. According to the Midrash, King Shlomo sang this psalm as he transports the Holy Ark into the Beit HaMikdash. Now, David truly desired to build a temple. It would only be his son, though, Shlomo, who would be allowed. David and Solomon had two styles of monarchy. David is the warrior king, the mighty and valiant, while Solomon is the political king of glory and wisdom. According to this idea, David's repetition of who is the king is not for poetic purposes alone, but affirms the sense of continuity. He built Jerusalem and planned the construction of the house of God, but his son Solomon completed the task. That's the Zed Dor Dorshav. Ibn Ezra takes a different approach, explaining that the change in the language represents a transition from God fighting the battles for Israel to a final idyllic time where there will be no longer a need for battle and fighting and valiance, because God's name will only be associated with Melech HaKavod, peace, tranquility, where the land will be quiet for years to come. Perhaps there's one more perspective that we can offer, a figurative explanation offered by Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch, who wrote a beautiful commentary on Tehillim. In it, he expresses that the gates here are not gates to enter the temple, but rather, quote, entry into the gates of human society, where God reveals himself first through shattering, catastrophic occurrences. But the second time, though, when society is more willing to open its gates to their accord, on their own accord, God no longer appears as valiant and mighty. God comes in all his glory and is one with mankind. Psalm 24 teaches us to view ourselves as living in a world given to us by a God who began it, sustains it, and will ultimately end it. A sobering yet comforting message. Indeed, this message is so important for us that the psalm is recited on the first day of every week when returning the Torah to the Ark and during the holiest of days as we crown the merciful King and ask for atonement. God is before us and after us, and he is watching over us as a father witnesses the first steps of a child with love and devotion. Shalom.